In the land of old, where the battles unfold, Llewellyn Grant rose with courage untold. He fought the English, he led a revolt, defying the crown and then the ruling dolt. Oh, Llewellyn Grant, in 1316 he led his men, strong as fuck, a Welsh-born legend, stuck it to the red flannel, Edward II.
Welcome to Tales for Wales, the pod that never fails to put the cherry of banter on the big fat cake that is history. I'm Jack, and as always, I'm joined by my fellow baker of laughs, my sous chef of the past, and pot wash of the riffs, Franco. Yes, chef! Yes, chef! Yes, chef! Today, you'll be schooling us on Llewellyn Bren, but before that, let's have a little chat. What you got? What chinwag material you got, mate?
After, like we said in the last episode, after fucking, five separate headsets, I finally found out now it's because my setting on my laptop had something called Mic Boost on. So that's why it was so loud and quite tinny. So going forward...
Maybe I could do with some of that. I'm always so quiet.
Oh, maybe I'll show you. Maybe I'll show you then after this. Stick around, sonny. And I'll show you a thing or two. But now my levels are back fine. So really sorry about the last couple of weeks. The last, 5 weeks or whatever. It's sorted now. Sorry. All right. So we can move on.
We're only human.
Yeah. And whilst we swiftly move on, I saw the maddest thing yesterday that I was just so perplexed by. On my street, there's a proper British red post box. You know, they're very kind of if you're from outside the UK, people often think it's very quintessentially British to see a
beautiful, beautiful British red post box.
Which is so beautiful. It's one of those where it's got ER written on it and stuff. You know, the proper red post box. But I saw this really elderly Asian bloke. He took about 10 photos of the post box. He took loads and loads and loads of it. And then two seagulls came gunning it down the street, squawking at each other. And one of them tried to bite the other one. And he stopped and he went to Gog. He went, "Oi!" And he took about 10 photos of the seagull. He was like, "What the fuck?" He's just following it around. And he stopped in the street and he looked really cool. He had a really nice tracksuit on. He had cool things. He got down really low and he's just taking this photo of this seagull.
Looked really cool. Laugh. Not world weary enough though to know a post box or a couple of gulls fucking fighting.
It's so funny. He come to Britain to see seagulls and the red post box, and in one foul swoop he got them both.
Went home and it was fucking amazing. I saw everything I wanted to see. Yeah. Ticked it all off the list.
Yeah, if it did make me laugh, because especially my street isn't the prettiest street in the world, so having someone come and take photos on it for that really did tickle me.
I got two. I know this is my very natural way of presenting things. I got two things to tell you, right? Yeah. Well, they just come to light.
Well, even that's a better way of saying it. I've got two things to tell you, rather than saying I've two anecdotes.
Yes. Okay. Well, I got two things to tell you, and they just come to light. One was just then we just recorded the last episode, and we just had a little pee break and everything, right?
Pee break is disgusting.
I was having a slash, and I got a text from Amy, and it was a meme of some kind, right? And it started off, I knew what it was as soon as it started. It was a sad voice with a melancholy piano number, and there was a little golden retriever, same dog as I've got. And it was the day will come where you don't mind the hairs bunching under the fucking sofas, blah blah blah, right? And I was like, I know what that's gonna be. It's gonna be a really sad thing about when your dog dies, you're not gonna miss all the things that you know, right? So I stopped it, and as soon as I stopped it and the sound stopped, I just heard downstairs. So I went downstairs, I went, "You watched it, haven't you?" And she was like, "Yeah," and she was bawling her eyes out, and she was cuddling the dog, you know, going, "Oh god," he's 3 years old. And she was just crying, and I went, "You watched the video, didn't you?" She was like, "Yeah." And then I said, "Do you mind if I share this on the pod?" She was like, "Do what you like."
We'll all be dead soon anyway.
Life is temporary.
My brother-in-law is a bit he's a bit not always the most socially, emotionally intelligent person. He's really, really nice, but sometimes a bit just not yet, not the most emotionally intelligent. And he went, so my niece loves my dog. So I took Bo up to see my niece for the weekend, and my niece was like walking her and stuff and like desperate for the parents to get one. And my brother was like, so how long will it live till he's dead?
Oh, God.
I said, imagine I said that to your child. How long to your kids? What's your life expectancy with your kids? And I said, I know Bo's not my child, but we're not having kids. So all of a sudden, she is as close to a child as we'll get. And I just thought, what a mad thing to say to him. How long is that thing you love's dead?
Yeah. When you think about that for a second.
Yeah. I said to him, I was like, Tim, you are not great at talking to humans, are you?
No. No, so that was my first one, right? And then, if you didn't know, and then the second one, this you'll love this one because it's one. Just come to light. It's just come to light, right?
Yeah.
Because me and you, we are not big fans of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, are we?
No. Oh, if there's some anti-Dwayne stuff.
Mate, listen to this, Goss. This, fucking sit yourself down, right?
Oh, I'm actually excited.
Do you know this little bit of internet gossip that was going around recently? Where Rebecca Ferguson, right? She was on the sort of promo trail. You'd know her to see her. She's in like the latest Mission Impossible movies. She's in loads of stuff.
Rebecca Ferguson.
I think she's Swiss, I think. Or Swedish.
I've just Googled her. I don't know her, but...
Yeah, she was in Dune, right? Dune Part 1 and 2. And she was doing the press tour for that. And in one of these interviews, they were saying, oh, how is it working with these guys? Blah, blah, blah. You know, and it was, oh, it was amazing. He said, because some people, you know, you work with and they're awful. I remember one person, and she goes on this tirade. I'll link you the interview later. And she says about how horrible this person was, right? And it set off this reaction in the internet that was like, who is this person she's talking about? Yeah. I wonder. It's only gone and bloody come out. It was Dwayne, wasn't it? It was fucking Big D himself,
it's so
right?
obvious because he's too nice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we've said it for years, mate. We're this bravado of I'm such a chummy, pally bloke. It's like, it's got to hide like some shit behaviour. And then, so this article I was reading about it, it then goes on about, did you know Amazon had this this film slated to come out last Christmas? And it was meant to be like a big franchise film, right? It was called Red One or something. And it was him, Chris Evans, J.K. Simmons, right? Like big cast and all that, bit of budget behind it. And it's been delayed now till this Christmas or November because, and now it's all come out, that's because of The Rock's like unprofessionalism. He was like arriving like 8 hours late to set. And he was like, instead of going to the toilet on set then, because he was late, he was pissing in bottles and expecting like his PA to get rid of it. And things like this. So I was reading it. I was just reading it on the when I was having a piss then. And I was like, oh, thanks. I fucking love this because I sent it in one of my other groups. And so I had to relay it. I haven't read the full article yet, but so I've just.
I've done a finding. Lots of it is saying that he's come out defending her, saying, yeah, I want to find out who. It says something like Dwayne The Rock Johnson defends Rebecca Ferguson after she refused to work with an idiot co-star. Dwayne offered his support to actress, saying he would love to find out who the absolute idiot was who shouted at her.
Oh, maybe it was maybe it wasn't official news that was him. Maybe it was
this
speculation given what this is. Right. I don't know. I'll forward the link on to you now, right?
Yeah, don't let me down because I want the world to know he can't be a good person. Cause...
Can't be trusted. Yeah. I'll forward the link on to you now. So I haven't read it all, but the way it got sent over and the boy who sent it to me said, Dwayne's the one that Rebecca Ferguson was on about with a shit co-star. And then it's been like, we've just been going back and forth. Like, yeah, you can't be that much of a fucking, like the bravado and shit without being a knob.
Yeah. Well.
So anyone who loves The Rock, soz, but we just don't, I don't buy it.
Because for me, it's all the humble bragging. It's like, oh God, it's so tough winning the People's Choice Award 6 times in a row. But it's not for me, it's for you guys. It's like, oh, shut up. It's not
Did
hard.
Did you see that one recently?
Just be
was
proud
like,
that you've won it.
He was like,
you got to make it
all right, guys. Everything's been asking for. We're going to In-N-Out Burger. First time In-N-Out Burger. Can't wait. It's going to be great. And it, like someone posted, you did this like 3 years ago, and they posted the video that was still on his Instagram. And it was like, first time going to In-N-Out Burger. And it's like, it's just
so. It's that other one where he's like,
disingenuous.
Oh, man, I had $7 in my pocket, $7, and here I am. This is the convenience store I used to rob from. It's like, chill out, mate. Yes, you've done an amazing thing. I don't. It's so like, it's not our sentiment, is it? Like, he's the king of the humble brag. He's like, ah, oh, my feet hurt so much from being on the red carpet all day and helping so many. Whereas, like, John Cena is quite charming with his stuff, where he's, like, done the most ever Make a Wish.
Someone who is actually genuinely humble. Look at, like, someone like Cillian Murphy, who's like, you know, he win an Oscar for fucking Oppenheimer.
Yeah. But I'd say he's he's not even humble. He's miserable.
He actually is. He actually has disdain for the industry.
I don't mean he has to be like that, but I just think I just find it quite unauthentic for him to pretend to be this incredibly upbeat, happy person. When be that kind of famous and rich, and you have to be crazy ruthless and quite sociopathic to, you know,
you can't get that level of success, can you, without being a little bit fucking like, I'll step on someone.
And I don't know, I just find it disingenuous and slightly unnerving. Yeah. I think really he must be a bit of a
like
maniac.
When, you know, it's like Young Rock and he's like, oh, I just took a break from my phone call where I was told that we were the highest rated show on a Tuesday on the Equinox.
Between 6 you know? And 5. Yeah, 5 yeah. and 6. Like, yeah.
And
in the
Chinese year of the pig, you know, so.
yeah, he does it all the time. He'll, like, so his movies are garbage, aren't they? It's like, oh, it's great to know that my new film of Big Man has just topped the Korean charts for overseas film directed by this man. It's just always like such a niche thing he's won.
Yeah, there's so many qualifiers to make it like that. It was the best in that category sort of thing.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I know people love The Rock.
I think he's on his fall now, because I remember Black Adam.
Yeah,
that was meant that had to be a success, and everyone says
admits when things were a misstep, and he's like, "Thanks for making Black Adam the best thing that's ever happened." And he also, when he made that song, that's the first time I've ever seen comments under his posts like slamming him, because his song was so bad. And he was like, "This is not the one."
I tried to think of lyrics from that then to quote, but I just can't. And then at one point he goes, rock! in it as well.
If you want to listen to someone make a song, listen to Vin Diesel's.
I'll put maybe in the chorus in it. I don't know, but it feels like I do. And I was frozen when you walked in the room. Cause every single word, it just makes my stomach turn cold. I don't know you, but it feels like I do. Because it's a banger. I don't care what anyone says.
I think I actually like that song.
It's
a fucking banger.
Yeah,
I unironically
like that song. I'm going to run on the dance floor with you. I'll grab your hand, rip you away from your wife, and me and you just go, but I feels like I do.
What's so funny is that he's made, like, Vin Diesel in his, like, 50s, made a pop song, and the album cover is just him smiling.
He looks high as a kite on it, doesn't he?
He's such a little loser. It's funny that like massive, grown, huge, like alpha men are such losers.
Yeah,
and like so desperate for people to like them.
In the Fast and Furious feud between Vin Diesel and The Rock, I'm always team Vin Diesel just because he's produced an absolute barbecue tune for me to listen to every summer.
I was thinking, mate, we're getting ahead of ourselves here with the anti-Rock agenda. My episode's a bit of a longy, so should we jump in?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's crack on.
Right. So I really enjoyed learning about this one because I didn't know anything about it at all before. I knew the names of some of the people. And when I originally wrote this, it was going to be about the Sheriff of Cardiff called Payne de Turbeville.
That was the one you were going to do. When I saw that it changed on the thing, I was like, ooh, you must have picked up on something.
Yeah, well, really, the story's about Llewelyn Brain. So I thought, well, let's give him the prominence rather than the cruel sheriff. This is really a story about, like, heroes and villains. And we're going to, we're going to look at Llewelyn Brain, who's dubbed the Welsh Robin Hood. But this is, like, a real Robin Hood, considered, like, you know, the English one.
Not a Dick Penderin.
You know, Robin Hood's considered, like, a folklore in England. Like, there isn't really a real Robin Hood. Whereas this Llewelyn Brain is fast becoming one of the great Llewellyns. But first, we're going to look at a real prick called Payne de Turbeville. spelled P-A-Y-N-E, who was Payne by name, Payne by nature.
Oh.
He was a local nobleman and the lord of Coity Castle near Bridgend. His ancestor, another Payne, was part of the like Norman lineage. This is all, I'll get to the age.
He was.
This is the 1300s where this story is taking place. But his ancestor participated in the Norman conquest of Glamorgan back in the 12th century. This ancestorial Payne was granted Coity as a reward, and his family had lived in the area ever since. So he was a Norman from Norman heritage, not a Welshman really. And he'd, his ancestry had been oppressors in Wales for best part of 200 years. Okay. The original
bad
Payne,
stock.
Yeah, so this and the original Payne, so the one from the 12th century, he was part of the 12 Knights of Glamorgan, who were a legendary group of mercenaries who followed Robert Fitzhamond, the Norman conqueror of Glamorgan. And I think Robert Fitzhamond might actually be fictional or not completely true, or there's some scepticism around there. But it's definitely an episode for us to look at, because these 12 Knights of Glamorgan, there's a lot of stories. And even though they're bad, you know, they're colonializers, they seem to have quite a lot of stories.
I was just about to say, that's the episode name there, isn't it? 12 Knights of Glamorgan. Yeah. Gotta be done.
And Payne is one of those 12 Knights. So, but now we're in 1315, and the lordship, so the Marsha land of Glamorgan, is without a ruler following the death of Gilbert de Clare, who we've spoken about before as like an antagonist in Welsh history. But he was the Marsha Lord of Glamorgan, which is like one of the biggest areas, biggest land areas in Wales. I don't know what you'd call it, but so it was the
like territory, kind of territory, isn't it? Like territory,
that the Marsha Lords could control, and really rich. So it was a really, really valuable place.
Fertile land and all that. Yeah.
But Gilbert de Clare had been killed in the Battle of Bannockburn up in Bunny, Scotland, you're a bastard, in the previous year. And due to de Clare being a massive virgin, he had no male heirs to inherit his administration.
Literal virgin as well, that's all we say.
And because of the feudal system, the lands passed back to King Edward II, who was the fourth son of the bastard Edward Longshanks. So we all know Longshanks, Edward I, the person who conquered Wales. His son, Edward II, was now King of England. And he chose Payne de Turbeville as this sheriff to oversee Glamorgan. But apparently Payne was like fucking detested by the local Welsh population, and he took this brutal, heavy-handed approach to his new duties, and was always a cruel cruel custodian of the area and a cruel sheriff and a cruel man, no matter what lands he was in charge of. But when he became this like elevated senior role, he treated the people incredibly badly, and he was working them to the bone, despite like there was at the same time there was this giant famine streak going across the UK, lots to do with like the war in Scotland and just poor management, had loads of debts being paid to England because of the war, and Longshanks' war in Wales was incredibly costly. There was just widespread discontent and widespread famine, and Payne had no
I won't give the Welsh a break. I'll fucking ride them harder. Yeah.
Literally work them to death. So much so that Payne's oppressive rule eventually led to Llywelyn Brin, who was a native Welsh nobleman, who was in quite good standings with some of the Marsha Lords before and through his ancestors and stuff. But it came to his attention that this just isn't on. So a quick background on Llywelyn. He was born circa 1267, but maybe 1280. And he's sometimes known as Llywelyn ap Gruffydd ap Rhys, or Llywelyn of the Woods. And Llywelyn Brin, he was a Welsh nobleman of the minor royal house of the Cantref of Senghenydd, and Miskin, which is like roughly where me and Jack are from. So Miskin Manor is
literally up the road from here, isn't it? When I was living in Craigar, that's like literally
on the corner.
A couple of roads down.
Yeah, and he's the descendant of Ivor Bach, who is his great grandfather, who's a prominent person in Welsh history. His father was Gruffydd ap Rhys, who was dispossessed of the Lord of Senghenydd in the year that Gilbert de Clare, the Earl of Gloucester, so that guy who I mentioned was like quite famous, being a Welsh oppressor. He took Llywelyn Brin's family's land, and he imprisoned his father. Yeah, he'd also imprisoned his father and in Ireland, and there's no record of him returning, so they're pretty sure he died over in Ireland away from his family. So that's a little bit of backstory about Llywelyn, but now back to his story. He married someone called Lleicu, which I really like the name.
Cliquey, yeah.
Yes, and they are prolific enough and managed to fit in enough time to sire 7 sons, who will come back to feature in the story later. But yeah, he had 6 or 7 sons. Not 100% sure how many, but sometimes they say 7, sometimes they say 6. But I'll get to with the confusion of that in a bit. So anyway, he knew something was not right with how bad the Welsh were being treated, and he needed to start a revolt. And he was like, this just isn't on. And the revolt started because of his objection to the oppression and how the native Welsh were being treated. But he didn't want to fight. He was like, I've stood as like a Welsh noble for a while. But you know, like in Braveheart, where they're kind of like, lots of the nobles sue for peace. They'd rather...
Yeah, they want to do it through the, what's the word? Like the proper channels almost. Yeah. Like not, diplomacy rather than diplomacy, like taking swords to people. Yeah.
He never wanted to have a war. He was just like, this isn't right. I'll go and speak on behalf of Welsh people. I've been involved in like the politics for a while. I got good standing. So he went over to England to go tell Edward II. And say, you know, this is how oppressive it's been. Something needs to be done, blah, blah, blah. However...
Sorry, Edward... mate, just to interrupt. I know you said earlier, did you say he was a descendant of Ivor Bach?
Yeah.
Is that the same Ivor Bach that scaled Cardiff Castle and kidnapped a Norman lord or something, wouldn't it, to get his land back or his kingdom back?
I think so, and it's the same area, so I'm pretty sure it was the same.
I'm sure, because he was like a Lord of Singhenydd as well, and he was, we talked about it in the Princes of Wales episode ages ago. Maybe we'll do an episode on him at some point, but I was thinking, I was actually going to mention that. I know that's something.
I was going to say, you've mentioned him before, just saying that. So he comes from a lineage where his great-grandfather fought against the Normans, and now he's kind of got to the part, you know, it's a couple of hundred years later, where, or even maybe, you know, 100 to 150 years later, where Wales has been conquered and now they're looking at new ways of doing politics and stuff. So his grandfather was a warrior, great-grandfather was a warrior, and he's now going through the diplomacy of whilst keeping like Welsh heritage going, but not kind of on the battlefield. So anyway, he went to England to go speak to the king about how awful this Payne was being. However, Edward II sided with Payne because Edward was the son of a prick, so he's also a prick, you know.
Of course,
the apple don't far from the tree.
They stick together, don't they, the old pricks.
Yeah, so he went to Edward II saying, this is how awful it is, and he was, you know, trying to stand up for the people, but Llywelyn was rewarded for his efforts for standing up for the people by being accused of sedition and threatened with execution. So he went out there, put his neck on the line quite literally, and now he's been accused of being
a fucking sedition charge for his trouble.
Apparently Llywelyn had gone to the king and asked him to call off Payne and to control Payne. Like, he was like kind of acting on behalf of Edward II. So he's called like a self-interested agent. And it was a real shock to Llywelyn. Like,
sorry again to interrupt me. It's for those who haven't listened to any other things where we've covered martial lords and things. Martial lords got way more power, didn't they, than your average lord, especially in England, because you were tasked with sort of repelling the Welsh at any point.
Yeah.
So you had a lot more autonomy, and you could it's not uncommon for these martial lords to
be the cruelest.
Yeah, be the cruelest and overstep, you know, what their remit was.
Exactly. But even by the martial lord standards, Payne was something worse than they'd seen in a long time. And Edward II wasn't too sad about that. He was kind of glad that this is happening to show the threat that England is still strong. And also, things weren't going that well for Edward in England. So having like control over parts of Wales was like really important to him. But anyway, the king stated that if the charges were found true, so he said, I'm accusing you of this. And if we find out it's true, you're going to be hung. And it was kind of guaranteed that he wasn't going to get the fairest of trials. And they even started calling him the son of death. And that was by the king himself. The king called him, you are the son of death.
I mean, take it's the gift great, of a fucking absolute badass nickname, though. Son of death.
And he got summoned to Lincoln on the 27th of January, 1316. And it was kind of like, you're coming here. You're going to have your sham.
You're definitely going to be killed. Yeah.
So he saw this coming and he secretly fled home. And he had no great problem starting a revolt because, like, the general discontent throughout Wales was like, we hate this.
Wales, and everyone thinks you're fucking top. And just rally a couple of men together.
So Llywelyn felt like he had no choice but to fight back, and he took aim at the largest castle in Wales and the largest in the UK at the time, which is Caerphilly Castle. He did this on the 28th, so he got called to Lincoln on the 27th, but he was back home by then, and by the 28th, he was like, right, I'm kicking off.
Wasting no time.
Yeah, so he kicked off.
I am fuming, boys. I'm going to do it right tonight.
Fuming. But you come to realise he's not that kind of person. He's not like this rash person. He's not one of those people who's like born to be a warrior, but he was like, I just see nothing else. Like, I've tried to go down the right routes. I've tried to like reason and they won't do this. So I just feel there's no other choice now, but we have to make a stand. So now we have this, a new addition to this great line of Llywelyn's, and this Llywelyn, Llywelyn Bryn, he managed to rally an impressive local force and an uprising against the cruel regime of the English sheriff. It was like he was fighting this not just for himself, but for like his fellow countrymen. And out of nowhere, Llywelyn amassed 10,000 Welshmen, including all of his sons, standing beside him ready to attack. And due to like the surprising nature of the attack, he managed to capture the constable outside Caerphilly Castle. And he and his men then captured the outer ward of the castle. So like really quickly, they got one of the biggest castles Europe's seen at the time.
When you said that, like the attack for the castle, like if anyone who's ever been there or anyone who maybe lives outside of Wales who's not seen it, it's enormous. Like you said, there's outer walls, inner walls, there's like a keep. When you were saying he captured it, I was thinking, fuck, that would be I would thought that'd be a huge ordeal.
So he captured the outer wall, but he couldn't break through to the inner defences. But he managed to get the constable. He got like really off guard because they just weren't expecting it from him. He wasn't that kind of seen as this figure to do this, but he rallied a huge amount of people, like a massive army. And then when they realized they couldn't get the defences, they turned to attack the economy that was so important to the area. So they started like burning all the anything to do with the economy, like, you know, timber mills, farms, all that stuff. And most of the locals were on their side, so they were kind of helping with them. But those who weren't, because lots of the time the English would put their own people there, either Flemish or English or people like that, they'd try and outbreed the locals. Those who stayed, they either killed them or they ran away. And they pretty much burnt the towns around them. They killed some of the townsfolk. They were like, you know, pretty much like, this is a message, Welsh or get out kind of vibe. And that's what, so when they realized they couldn't storm the castle in one quick move that they wanted to, they set up a siege and they kept loads of soldiers inside the castle, loads of enemy soldiers inside the castle. And as I said, the Welsh were fucking sick of the oppressors. So this now, like, news of this, like, popped up. So revolts quickly spread throughout Morgan and Kent. So Kenfig Castle was sacked, as was the one in Llantrisant, and several others were attacked, including St. George Superiori, Tregeag Castle, Llangibby, Dinevor Castle. All of these castles across like South Wales were just all of a sudden bombarded and sieged and sacked.
Siege with the Welsh. That's amazing.
Yeah. Wales was like a light, and this dragon had been reborn, and now towns, including Cardiff, were raided and burnt to the ground. So, like, out of nowhere, the Welsh, who had been pretty much dormant.
They underestimated
for, like,
old Llywelyn Bryn, and massively. Then he just went, let's do it. Yeah.
If you think Wales had pretty much been conquered in 1282, and this is now 1316, it'd been like 40 years or 35 years, and Wales hadn't done anything massive, and now the biggest Marshal lords and stuff, and the most important rich areas of Wales were now burnt to the ground.
I love this. So, it's like when you start looking into the history again, like we've said many a time, the history that is not taught in Wales.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's we're always rebelling. Wales is always rebelling. We don't go fucking like 50 years without some kind of rebellion, whether it's small scale or big scale. You know, because the only things you learn about really are Llywelyn ap Gruffydd in Llywelyn or Glyndŵr. That's it. And those are
exactly,
that's the difference between what the 1200s and the 1400s.
Yeah.
You know, and you think that's kind of the only time you've done it. But if you and you actually, you know, I know I didn't even know it until we started doing this podcast, but there's so many instances where we're pushing into England or we're trying to rebel. Like it's like in our nature to nature to just fucking fight against it.
You got from the Romans up until like the 1400s, there's just constant battles for it and like fighting for independence, and then when battles stop, politics begins and stuff. It's crazy. Like you said, like we love history and we didn't know anything about this stuff, and this is where we're our bread and butter. This is like in Cardiff.
This is what we're about
it. So anyway, a furious Edward II demanded to resolve this, And he was like, this has to be crushed. So he ordered Humphrey de Bohun, who was Earl of Hereford and the lord of the neighbouring Brecon. And these, again, were martial lords in who were put in these positions to be pretty barbaric. And
I was going
to
say, I can only assume bad eggs anyway. So,
And they managed to gather their overwhelming forces, supported by men of the chief martial lords of people like Henry Grosmont, Roger Mortimer, who we speak of before.
Oh, Mortimer, yes, I remember him.
Yeah. So we get like these are the big players with like huge forces behind them. So this was like the largest swelling of soldiers Wales had seen since the days of Llywelyn ein Llyw Olaf. And English troops came from like Cheshire and North Wales, plus some Welsh soldiers were drafted in from West Wales. And it was now 3 months on. So in March, forces had advanced from Cardiff and there was a brief battle at Castell Morgraig, which forced Llywelyn and his men to break off the siege at Caerphilly. And Castell Morgraig's in like North Cardiff, I think.
All right.
But it was just like, this had been 3 months of like the economy being burnt down. Welsh were back to being like looking after themselves. But they given enough time for the English to properly amass like huge armies. And you forget how, like, I think at the time of Owain Glyndŵr, England is 14 times more people than in England, in Wales.
Yeah.
Or, and so just the sheer volume of people compared to how many we have is,
the like difficult. The catchment area to produce an army is huge, isn't it? Yeah.
But now they're being trapped because they come from West Wales, from North Wales, from England. So the Welsh retreated higher up to the North Glamorgan Plateau, like, where they kind of could try their best to like either retreat safely or set up a last stand. But Hereford and his men were moving south from Brecon, so like they were pretty much pincered. And Llywelyn realised this, and he realised the fight was completely hopeless. So he gathered his forces on the hills, and he told them the revolt was his fault, and he's going to surrender. So by March the 18th, 1316, Llywelyn surrendered to the Earl of Hereford at Ystradfelly. He pleaded that only he should be punished and his followers should all be spared. And like this gallant behaviour earned him respect from the captors, including Roger Mortimer, one of the witnesses to his surrender.
I thought you were definitely going to say that these martial lords were bastards and did not honour that.
Well, that's the thing. Hereford has often been a Welsh place and often been an English place, but there's a place where it's a bit more harmony. Like people in, well, not that that might not be completely true, but there was definitely more assimilation. So English people would sometimes ask for Welsh law because they would practice Welsh law in Hereford.
Right.
And there's a lot more like of a crossover there. So anyway, Hereford and Mortimer, as in the lords, both promised to try and intercede on Llywelyn's behalf, meaning they'd speak of his character and they'd try and lobby for mercy from the king. So anyway, Llywelyn got arrested and he got sent to as a prisoner first to London in July, and then the Tower of London. So like, you know, that is the biggest prison in the world, in the UK at the time. So he was in the Tower of London from the 27th of July until June 1317. And during that time, true to their word, Hereford and Mortimer urged the king to pardon Llywelyn and his whole family. Yeah. And it seems likely that their influence had won a pardon for most of Llywelyn's men. So they stuck with it. And then in 1317, Llywelyn became the prisoner of the ruthless Hugh, the younger dispenser. And he was one of the King Edward's favourites at courts, which means that, you know, he had like the word favourites is like.
It's like you have a lot more leeway to get away with shit, you know, go over your remit and your jurisdiction. That's it. And just get a free pass.
Well, so much so that people thought he might have been the lover of the king. And if you've watched a lot of Braveheart, you know, like the horrible King Edward, he has that son who falls in love with his advisor, who gets thrown out of the window by Longshanks.
Yeah, it's heavily, heavily implied that he's gay, isn't it?
And we've got to insert the clip. Who is this man who speaks to me as if I needed his advice?
I am skilled in the warfare tactics, sir.
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
In the film, so that in the film, Edward I is speaking to Edward II, who's the evil antagonist in the story we're saying today. But in the film, the guy he throws out the window is someone called Philip. And in real life, it was rumoured to be someone called Piers Gaveston, or potentially Hugh Dispenser. So like that's who he's kind of mirroring. Because both of these men, Edward II is kind of been accused of falling in love with. But anyway, Hugh Despenser the Younger had now become Lord of Glamorgan, and in November 1317, he was the largest landowner in South Wales, and he was a great rival of Mortimer. And Hugh, again, was incredibly cruel, and he, without the king's direction, he took Llywelyn Brenin back to Cardiff Castle under a ruse, and when he eventually arrived there, he hung, drawn, and quartered him at a sham trial. And afterwards, he put his body parts on exhibition in various parts of the country until he was buried at Greyfriars at Cardiff. And I didn't know this, but Greyfriars, there's Greyfriars Road in Cardiff. That's been around since about the 1200s. And it was a friary, which was like a stall, like where the friars go to. And it was like a stalwart. There was a place where friars would care for all the poor and needy in Cardiff. And they were like incredibly good people. When Owen Glyndwr,
they put his bodies there.
They buried him. So the friars, but when Owen Glyndwr came to sack Cardiff, he left the friary because they were like renowned for being helpful people to like all the poor. All of Llywelyn's lands were seized by Hugh the Despenser, and this action was condemned at a time and later used as an example of the growing tyranny of the Despensers. Who had also imprisoned Llaki and some of her sons in Cardiff. So like he'd like Llywelyn, this honourable man, got tricked into taken back from London when he was still like being on trial, and then he got hung, drawn, and quartered in his own place.
Sounds like humiliation. A couple of the English, the martial lords, they were at least honourable in the sense that they had that chivalric code or whatever, wasn't it? You know, they stuck to it was a lot about honour back then, wasn't it? At least they stuck to it, whereas it seems like this Despenser was just like, nah, fuck it. Well, I'll just be the most horrible bastard I can be.
What happens next is pretty wild. So this antipathy to the Despenser family like massively grew, and against from loads of people in England and rulers in Wales. And Llywelyn's death united the native Welsh and the martial lords together. So in 1321, this baronial revolt arose across England, and the martial lords in Wales, along with the Welsh gentry and those of like royal heritage, all joined together. And the barons were under the Earl of Hereford, who I mentioned earlier. And they like petitioned the king to dismiss Despenser. And in their petition, the murder of Llywelyn Brenin was one of the leading complaints on the list. These English rulers and English people in charge were like, look what you've done to this like noble person. That's not how we do things. But the loved up King Edward II refused, and he didn't dispense him. So this alliance of the local Welsh and the martial lords, they raided Despenser's lands in Glamorgan for 10 days, burnt it all down again. And in doing so, they freed Llaki and her sons, which is pretty sick. That like Hereford took... It's like I just don't know. It's pretty cool that they're like, no, you're part of us. So much so that Llywelyn's sons all joined Hereford's army, and they were all in service as quite high positions to Hereford.
I love that this certain martial lord Despenser was such a bastard that even his fellow bastards were like, that's too bastardy for me, mate. And joined with the people they were essentially subjugating to.
And this has come into a point in history where Wales has been conquered now. And it's about looking how do you come to terms with being a better, happier place, or not happy, you know, like a more, like, not a constant war. So I think some of the martial lords might have been a bit more palatable because they realized.
Well, it must be, I mean, don't get me wrong, the benefits of being a martial lord where you had like a bit more scope and sort of autonomy in your own lands and stuff, I'm sure that was great. But really, realistically, you don't want to be constantly fighting off Welsh rebellions, do you? That costs money, time, men, possibly your life if you have to go out into battle and stuff like that. You'd be much happier if the Welsh were placated and happy enough, at least, to not like be knocking at your door.
Exactly. So they raised up this army. They were like, okay, we're attacking Despensers. Soon this will come to Edward's door. So Edward realized he had to expel the Despensers until he could like gather a big enough army to fight the barons head on. And that's what he did in the Battle of Burrows Bridge in 1322. Edward had a big enough army with thanks to the Despenser family and all their money, and sadly that's where the Earl of Hereford meets his end. He gets killed at the Battle of Burrows Bridge.
It always happens to the best of us, doesn't it? That's the thing, I know, the best of them.
With the Despensers' return back in Edward's court, Shlakey and his sons were once again imprisoned, this time in Bristol Castle. But their actions soon aroused more resistance. So like Shlakey, like often in Welsh history, the women have a really important role in, like, if they're not treated properly. It's like when Gwenllian got beheaded unceremoniously. When they take these actions of that aren't with giving people like the proper prestige, especially when it's against like women, it can have a huge impact on the locals being like, and Shlakey and his sons were regarded really highly as being like brave fighting.
Do you think that's something to do with like, obviously there is this you know, on the England side or the Norman descendants, if you like, the chivalric code or whatever, chivalric code, whatever, however you pronounce it. But is it like, do you reckon there's an element of, because of the Welsh descendants from the Celts, where it's like the women were, there wasn't that inherent opinion that women were less than men. It was, you were just as good as a man if you could do, if you could perform.
That's what I mean.
Just as
like,
as a man, you know?
It's so like if you
treated a Welsh man that was a leader, like you said, honorably, like Llywelyn Bren, badly, that gets the same disdain.
That's what
as
I mean.
If you treat a woman badly,
there isn't the same disparity of saying like, oh, well, that's just a woman. It's here. It's like, this is our leader. So it's like, so anyway, Shlakey and his sons were imprisoned in Bristol, but this really pissed off, this caused resistance again. So in October 1326, another successful rebellion, led this time by Roger Mortimer, who had also been imprisoned in the Tower of London, but he escaped and fled to France, and now he was back with a proper vengeance. And so this, all this stuff here, all leading from like the death of Llywelyn, this gave the Despensers and Edward further cause to regret what they'd done in Glamorgan and how they had to flee London and run for their lives. Edward continued west up the Thames Valley, reaching Gloucester between the 9th and 12th of October, and he hoped to reach Wales and from there mobilise an army against the invaders. And Mortimer and Edward's former wife, Isabella of France, who had turned against Edward and led her support to Mortimer, they were like, they were really close on their tails. So like, as they were trying to get to Wales, Mortimer was chasing them right from behind them. And
hot
as each day
on his
passed,
heels,
And as each day passed, Mortimer and his gang gathered new supporters due to the detest of Despensers and Edward. So like, in the surrounding areas, similarly to how people in Wales felt about them, people in the surrounding places felt the exact same. In like Bristol and the close to border towns. Edward and the younger Despenser, they crossed over the border and they set sail from Chepstow, and they were probably aiming to get to Lundy in Ireland, where the king had hoped to receive like refuge and then raise a fresh army. But bad weather drove them back and they landed in Cardiff. So Edward retreated to Caerphilly Castle. It's kind of out of the fire into the frying pan. Other way around. Out of the frying pan into the fire. Edward managed to retreat to Caerphilly Castle and attempted to rally his remaining forces there. So he's pretty much back to the scene where all of this began. And whilst they tried desperately to raise an army, obviously no one in Wales had any appetite to support them. And even though they were offered like money, land, stuff like that, all his help was refused.
It feels like the, I mean, I don't know how the story ends, but it feels like the writing's on the wall a little bit here, you know, where it's like, you're on the back foot. Why would you don't want to join the losing side, do you?
Well, also, they hate him.
And that as well, and also
it's nothing to do with joining the losing side. I don't think they care about that. It's they hate this man and they hate his thingy. So I think it's nothing to do with like winning or losing, because they've fought before where they know they might lose. I think they just hate. It's like the man who's oppressed you, conquered you, asking you for help.
And all these that thing is as well that like Edward II had many an opportunity, by the sounds of things, to make things right, or at least do the right thing. And just for, well, if the rumours are to be believed, just for a little bit of cack, he was like, nah.
Well, no, he was a really bad leader. He, like, fucked things up in England, did it awful in Scotland. He was a really, really bad king. So Edward's authority completely collapsed in England. In his absence, Isabella and her faction took over the administration and all the support from the church. So Edward was like, shit out of luck. Her forces surrounded Bristol, where he, the Despenser elder, had taken shelter. So that's the father. He was surrounded and then executed. Edward and Hugh the younger fled the castle around the 2nd of November, leaving behind loads of jewellery, huge supplies, and a cash of over £1,300 back in the day. So fuck, you know, millions.
Jesus Christ, what, in the 1300s?
Christ. Yeah. So like, they just, they scarpered. It wasn't like they had time to plan. And again, people think they were hoping to reach Ireland, but on the 16th of November, they were betrayed by those who helped them escape from the castle, and they were taken. So they had this search party say, okay, come with us, we'll get you out of here.
Oh,
like,
yeah, very we'll Game of Thrones style. For a very, very small fee. And yeah. Then, yeah. Sorry.
Edward was escorted first to Monmouth Castle and from there back to England, where he was held at the Earl of Lancaster's fortress in Kenilworth. And Edward's final remaining forces, by now besieged in Caerphilly Castle, all surrendered after like 4 months of being like besieged. Isabella Mortimer rapidly took revenge on the former regime. So Hugh Despenser, he was put on trial, declared a traitor, disemboweled, castrated, and then quartered. And he was executed. So he was absolutely done. So,
yeah, right.
Edward's former Chancellor, Robert Bollock, he was died in Fleet Prison. Earl of Arundel was beheaded.
Robert Bollock, did you say?
No, Baldock.
Oh, definitely say, or Robert Bollock. I was like, you skimmed over that way too quick if that was it, yeah.
Edward's position, however, was really problematic because he was still married to Isabella, and because they didn't like divorces then and stuff, in principle, he was still king. But most of the new administration had much to lose if he was to be released, and if he was potentially to regain power, then all of the things that New England was looking like, lots of those in charge would lose it. So he was imprisoned on the fear that he might escape. And whilst he was in prison, he was murdered. So they don't 100% know who did it or what did it, but whilst being in prison, they thought best thing to do now is to have him killed. So with the overthrow of Edward II, the estates in St. Henneth were now restored to Llywelyn Bren's sons, Griffiths, John, Meurig, and Roger William. Roger William and Llywelyn. Earls of Hereford continued to pay at Brecon an allowance to their mother, Llakey, as well. So, like, it turned up pretty nice for the his family.
For the remaining family of Llywelyn Bren, yeah. In the end, I mean, ordeal and a half, but yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, from 11th of February 1327, Llywelyn's sons, I'll just name again, Griffiths, John, Meurig, Roger, William, and Llywelyn, all the land that went back to them. And then his mother also got, like, tribute paid to her for her ordeal and stuff. And now Llywelyn's effort marked the last serious challenge to English rule in Wales until the attempts of Owain Llaw Goch with the French support in the 1370s. Mm. And let me just double check that's the right date.
I was going to say, again, you know what I said earlier, can't go bloody 50 years without some sort of rebellion.
No, yeah.
You know, you think, I thought you were going to say until Glyndŵr. And I was like, no. Then you said Llaw Goch. I said, oh yeah, because he was before that.
And that wasn't even that long. Like, so this, the Owain Llaw Goch stuff was in the 1370s. It's slightly different because it didn't come to fruition. But
attempt at least, yeah.
Through Payne de Turbeville's cruel act as sheriff and Hugh Despenser the Younger's unlawful execution, Llywelyn the Brin pretty much led to King Edward II, the son of the worst man to ever visit Wales, that being Edward I, not only losing his life, but also losing his kingdom due to his actions against a Welshman. And I do think that had Longshanks tried to conquer Scotland first instead of Wales, it could have been so different. Because while Edward spent the last decade of his reign relentlessly campaigning against the Scots, his son, Edward II, abandoned the war almost entirely. And in this situation, the Scottish king, Robert the Bruce, soon took the opportunity to regain what had been lost and like even invade England. And you could picture Wales doing something similar. Although,
yeah, I see what you mean. Like if he'd have done it the other way around and then...
Yeah, because
Edward II would have, reneged on all the lands he'd have got in Wales. We'd have claimed it all back. And
yeah, because the way it goes, Edward I took to Wales first, then Scotland. But had he gone to Scotland first and then died before conquering it, or even if he conquered it, then came to Wales, by the time his son took over, his son just didn't have the appetite for war that his dad did. And he was really poorly mismanaging it. He got the country into debt. He was so much so that, like, even before this happened, a bunch of barons raised something called, this is like a word about it, where they raised a, like, pretty much an agreement from all the barons saying, if you don't shape up, you're getting shipped out. So he had to, like, come to loads of, like, concessions and show that he was going to be a lot more frugal and better. And I don't think Wales probably didn't have the power like Scotland could in terms of like man size and unity to invade England. And I don't think you wouldn't want to. But I definitely think had it been the other way around, Wales could have like re-strengthened and re-fortified and avoided being conquered. So like...
Yeah, definitely. I wonder as well, like you're saying about, you know, because Edward I was, as all the bad things he did for Wales and everything like that, and in Scotland, you can't doubt he was an effective ruler.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wonder if it's... I'd love to look back and just, like, count how many times you get a really good king, or rather effective king, shall I say, rather than good. And then that produces an heir that is subpar, because they kind of grow up with it easy. you know?
Yeah, I think it's, we see it quite, yeah, I bet you it happens a lot.
Yeah.
Although I think, yeah, Alfred the Great had quite a good son after him. But yeah, so that was a bit of a longy, but I think Llewelyn Brian's definitely up there with one of the best.
That was so cool. I'd never even heard of Llewelyn Brian before. Yeah. And it's mad that Payne D'Urville gets, like, because that was the original name of the episode, wasn't that?
Yeah.
That he sort of comes up before you hear about Llewelyn Brian.
So you can, there was an exhibition at Cardiff Castle. And there's you can have it in your headphones and it'll take you to the room where he was, Llewelyn was killed, and they call it a murder because it was a sham trial. So you can be in the room where he was hung, drawn and quartered, and hear it all. You hear it through the I think you hear it through the sheriff's, so Payne de Turbeville's kind of like,
it was like narration or whatever.
Yeah, narration. So I'm not sure what you'd call it, but and apparently it's like really well acted, and it's like kind of, I think it's similar to vibes like the Horrible History stuff. So it's like if you have any children and they want to hear it, it's kind of like child friendly. But it'd be pretty cool to have experienced going in there and knowing exactly who was killed and stuff. But like, we live in this city and we don't know about this. So
I know. Yeah, that's mad. This has been one of the more interesting ones we've had in a while. I think for me,
I've
never even heard about this, and the way it expands, like, the different martial lords, and like his death turned other martial lords against what was it called? Sorry, the baddie,
the dispenser.
Dispenser. Yeah. Like I never even heard of any.
And isn't it mad? Like the death of a Welshman was the butterfly effect at the end of a king being in charge of England.
I was about to say, don't be a fucking prick like Edward the First, because it'll all come back on you in the end, fella. Your son will have to reap those fucking reap those rewards that you sow.
You know, in Braveheart, where the French wife whispers in his ear, like, "Who do you think will be king after you're dead, or who do you think will rule after you're dead?"
Yeah, your son will not live long on the throne. I swear it.
And
yeah,
so it's true.
Yeah, I like that. I like it.
So I really enjoyed this one, and I was writing it last night thinking, like, oh god, like, this is why the pod's so good for us, because we love history, but we're constantly finding new stuff out, and whenever we worry that we might run dry.
I was just saying, can you imagine the time there was, like, for the listeners, months and months ago now, like last year sometime, we were like, oh, what if we run out of stuff, and like, we're just constantly finding new stuff now, so I don't ever fear that we'll run out.
And every time we do an episode, we're like, oh, well, someone pops up, like the 12 Knights of Glamorgan, and we're like, oh, well, we should research them.
Definitely.
And, you know, we always find more people in within each episode.
Mate, it's layers between layers. That's how it was made.
All right. Well, Diolch and Grandad, guys. It's a bit of a longy tonight, but I love this era. I absolutely love this era. So
we were just saying indulgence. The other day when we love this, we've got a newfound love of the smaller kingdom antics,
definitely.
You know, like with it within the Welsh and also with the martial lords. We should definitely do like a series, like the martial land series or something, and just cover every single martial land, because I bet every single one has had like so much going on in it over the years.
Like, it's only like 40 years since Llewelyn died, but like the Wales had changed dramatically since then. Llewelyn, but like we always we know that now we've done it for long enough. We know names like De Clare and Roger Mortimer and stuff like that.
So I was going to say, they just ring a bell, don't they?
Yeah. And I think that helps us knowing, like, this picturing the story a bit better.
And I don't know about you, but like, I'm getting a much firmer idea of a timeline.
Definitely. The chronology is so much clearer. And that was a big issue before.
Like you said, before when we started, you know, we knew Llewelyn was late 1200s.
Yeah.
And Glyndwr's early 1400s. It's like, right,
pretty much
what's
all
between
there?
And then, you know, like this, now we've got Llewelyn Brenn, who's mid 1300s, you know, and then late 1300s is Llawgoch. And you get these, because we're doing it enough now, I've kind of got like, you know,
and
I couldn't
Llewelyn,
reel
we
off
had
dates.
His dad, like, we had like his uncle David, and then.
Yeah, then, and you got like Llewelyn the Great, and. Like, I couldn't tell you specific dates exactly, but I can sort of have there's like an idea in my head of the chronology of it all, which is, it helps so much in like imagining how the events play out.
I think Llewelyn Vara will be the next big one for us to do. And that was because he had that 40-year rule, and we often just kind of gloss over that, but that's like pretty unheard of. So like,
we didn't, I thought we did Llewelyn Vara, didn't we?
No, we've done Owain Vara.
Oh, I'm vowed. Sorry, that, yeah. Again. I'm still not perfect with anything like
yeah. Yeah. Anyway, let's call this a podcast and we'll catch you all soon.
Yeah.
Just
cheers, all the old. Ta-da.
Oh, Llewellyn Brand. In 1316, he led his men. Strong as fuck, a Welsh born legend. Stuck it to the red flannel, Edward the Second. In the land of old, where the battles unfold, Llewellyn Bran rose with courage untold. He fought the English, he led a revolt, defying the crown and the ruling dogs. Oh, Llewellyn Bran, in 1316, he led his men. Strong as fuck, a Welsh-born legend, stuck it to their wet flannel, Edward II.